All right, guys, thanks for downloading once again the PWCS Wrestling Podcast. I am the co-owner and co-creator of PWCS Wrestling, Greg Jovi. I'm super happy to have you here. Last couple weeks have been more and more popular each week, so we're gaining download and gaining consistency. So every Monday night, it seems like, you can check right here to see the new episode of the podcast. And I'm really excited to release this one. It's talking all about the first championship match, so our first season all the way back in 2014, I guess it was. It's hard for me to remember sometimes. The huge championship match that we had, which focused on My Ego Busters versus The Blacklist, we break it down in detail. So this might be a little shorter of an episode because it only took us about 20, 25 minutes, but that's a really long time for us to focus on one match. But it was warranted. I mean, this is the most historic match in the history of our promotion. I mean, if we run for 10, 20, 30 years, I think it's all going to be because of this match. This match legitimized us. This match gave us everything that we have. And we're going to go into detail why I believe that and how everything went down beat by beat. So if you haven't seen this match, go to Smart Mark Video and purchase this. This is not a commercial for that. That's not the reason that we're doing this. But to me, this is the match that I have always said I would show somebody if they said, "What do you mean you're doing this team sport wrestling thing? I don't get it." I would show them this match, this DVD particularly, because this was back when Jason, the co-creator, was and another co-owner was doing more of the video production, right down to each and every DVD that we went out. So he had on this all the stats, all the history, everything. Dan is sort of learning on the fly with our video production here. So big shout out to the nameless, faceless announcer, Daniel, who not only is he learning video production on the fly, doing commentary for the first time, and hosting this podcast with me, but he does so much behind the scenes. So shout out to Dan. But back then, Jason was doing it, and Jason does that kind of stuff for a living. So he had these slick video packages. I think if I handed somebody that DVD, it beautifully encapsulates what we do at PWCS. We told this story. Each season's like a book, and this was our first book that we got to write the final chapter of. And I think I say it in the audio with the nameless, faceless announcer, Daniel. But if we would have only written this book, if halfway through season two, something would have went belly up and we never ran another show, we at least could have looked back on this. And we would have been upset now. Just like if you came up to me today and said, "Greg, you're never going to run another show," I would be probably livid and sad and a whole host of emotions. But I think 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 months down the line, I would look back and go, "You know what? We did all this great stuff." And that's kind of how we felt when this one was over, when the final 3 count happened. It was like, man, we had this book in our head, and we got to watch this whole thing play out start to finish. And somehow, improbably, two dudes that had nothing but a little bit of know-how. I had a little bit of a history in the business. Jason had a little bit of history with creative writing and video production. And we had a lifelong passion for promoting professional wrestling. And we came together and produced this thing. You know, because it was a lot of every season sort of is a this is, I guess maybe we can get into this for the intro. Every season really is a brainchild of Jason and myself. So creatively, the way it usually works is one of us will come up with an idea of kind of an arc of where we want it to go. We will then pitch that to the other person, and it'll get pitched back almost the opposite. And then we end up finding this middle ground. And that's kind of beautifully how we work as a creative unit. This first season, I don't think we went into it anywhere, so we might as well go here. I wanted to really sort of back into the finals because I was constantly worried, not so much now that I've established some good faith, but I was constantly worried about the boys, if you will, the other wrestlers, seeing that I didn't want them to think this was just something I did to put myself over and give myself a bunch of matches. I was in there for a creative reason, and hell yeah, I wanted to be involved in it because I love managing, but it was more, I thought I could help get the stories across. And we ended up, as Jason sort of wrote it, he was like, "You're the main villain. You have to be the guy that goes there." And so when I pitched this first season to him, I pitched it as me sort of being a shit heel and backing in and just barely squeaking in. And he was the one that came out and said, "No, man, you have to fucking dominate." He was like, if I had my way, you'd go undefeated. But I don't think that we have the goodwill with the fans to not give them something in the middle of the season, which is why we ended up settling on the big JoJo Bravo victory at stage 2. If you go back and listen to those episodes. But So we looked at here and we ended up finding that middle ground of I dominated for the first two, but then I kind of slipped and everything started to spiral around. And then, a very last minute, I get that big victory with Christian Rose to get me into the finals and get the momentum back. And that's the way we usually work. Every season sort of works like that. So it's an awesome creative partnership that I share with Jason. Normally, I would say Jason, I would describe Jason as the man behind the camera, but old Jason got into the worst Royal Rumble. So I can't wait to discuss that with him when we get to that point. But to focus again on this match and why it's so important, we would be nothing if this match didn't deliver. And so I'm very excited to bring you the breakdown of the first ever championship match. It wasn't even called the Mega Ticket at the time. We settled on Championship Spectacular because I guess we couldn't think of anything better. But I'm very excited to bring you this match. I would love to hear any questions or comments you guys have about it. And like I said, if you're new, if you came to us in season two, you came to us since we moved to Spalding Hall, and you've never gone back and given any of our events a chance, give this one a chance. It was the first one that a lot of the Anarchy fans came to. But if you weren't in that group and you kind of are just catching on now, go back and give it a shot, man. It's got Colt Cabana, it's got Jimmy Jacobs, and a lot of really fantastic professional wrestling top to bottom. And I'm still proud of it to this day. We watched it, obviously, to record this podcast. And I think every single match, specifically this finals match, holds up. There's just so much emotion involved. That's another thing I don't think we got into at any stage of this audio. But, you know, there was a lot of emotion involved in this match. For me, obviously, I kind of told you about seeing the end of this book play out. I'm out there involved in it. We've talked at different points about how big of a fan I was of Jimmy Jacobs at the time, how cool it was to have him involved in it. But you had a lot of these other guys in there, a lot of the Blacklist guys. The Blacklist was a genuine thing. I mean, it was sort of this island of misfit toys of guys like Mikazi. It came back to the business to be a part of it, needed it to be a success. Jojo Bravo was kind of floundering in other places and didn't really know where he wanted to go as a character. And this was his first opportunity to be a main event guy. Outcast hadn't been a singles wrestler in a long, long time and was put into that position. Nate Redwing had never been in the area before. So for those four guys to come together as the only legit unit that went all year together and, spoiler alert, win this championship, it meant a lot to them. And they cut that very genuine promo at the end, which we do talk about in the audio. But so I won't keep beating around the bush. We'll get to it. Go ahead and dive in to the first ever championship spectacular match. And I'll come back and holler at you at the end. Thanks so much.
Finally, the coup de grace of what you have been working for the past 5-6 months to be able to finish the 2014, correct?
Yeah, 2014.
The 2014 season. Having your ego busters going 4-on-4 in an elimination style match versus the Blacklist.
This is the big... Yeah, the big finale that we, and the whole rest of the night had gone perfect. And so by the time we got to this match, I had all the confidence in the world that it was going to pull off. And as we mentioned, Gary J had to cancel. That was
Mr. Ego Buster.
Yeah. So, and yeah, the, literally like the leader of the Ego Busters. Yeah. So we replaced him with Hype Gotti from Omaha, who's a guy that I wish we could have got to work with more. Like he's coming out here, and this is kind of the dawning of Tinder, and he's swiping left or I don't know which way you swipe negatively, but he was doing the swipe right or swipe left at women in the crowd, uh-huh. and he had it, man. He was very charismatic, and so you had him. SB almost didn't make the match. Dan almost ended up having to work twice because SB was working South Broadway. And he was, like, close to the main event. They started an hour before us.
Oh, you mean, like, that night?
Yeah, that night.
That night working South Broadway? Okay.
SB didn't show up until, I think, the J.D. Riggs-Adam Rich match.
Holy shit, right before?
Yeah, so everything else, like, was, you know, Jimmy was constructing the match, and I think we ended up just plugging SB in to what they already had. But, yeah, it was real touch and go there for a minute. That was the only sort of thing of, like, uh-oh, you know, and I remember he got there, and they threw it together real quick, but... Watching, not to, I know we're going to go very heavy on Jimmy on this these episodes, but watching Jimmy construct a match was one of the most interesting things I've ever seen in my entire life.
Yeah.
Because you could tell he was trying to let everyone else, you know, seven other guys in the match, trying to let them all, like, work through their stuff.
but he would just like get frustrated and then finally get up and go, okay, look, like this is what we're going to do. Blah, blah, blah. And he'd run through a whole spot and then just go sit back down and just be like his head in his hands, just listening, getting ready. And, you know, like,
and then the seven guys would be talking about the rest of it.
And that just kind of happened in a cycle of like, he would just like, oh, okay, but here's how that could be better. Like, and he would just run through it. And it was just like, man, you really got to see, like, because there's so many guys that had been in the business for a long time in that match. Wyatt and Mikazi and Outkast and, you know, and not, not that they had bad ideas. I'm sure the match would have been great without Jimmy, but it was just awesome to see him sort of come in and be like, no, this is how you could do it better, just off the top of his head. And it really gave an appreciation for just how smart the dude is for the wrestling business and how, you know, the fact that he went on to be a writer and do that for so long and so successfully is not shocking at all. Just from watching that experience, you know. And so that was a fun memory of that. I remember Mikazi described it as, he was like, I feel like Jimmy Jacobs is a physical embodiment of what's going on in Frank Zappa's mind.
But before the match could even get started, you had to get all the teams out to the ring. I'm stuttering over all my words for some reason. But it seemed like it just took forever for the match to actually even get started, because everyone for the Ego Busters had to come out separate, including you.
Yeah.
You had your own entrance at the beginning. An entrance for a manager, which I must say is quite a strange thing. Then you got Hype Gotti. Then you got Brandon Espinosa. It just went on and on. And then you get to the Blacklist, and they all come out as one.
And that was a calculated move. Like I've talked about with the towel thing with Kennedy, where that was something of like, I felt like that set up the match so well. And we had done a good job of, you know, for time, doing it throughout the night, you know. The show was running very well, even with the tag match going super long. And, you know, we had the time to do it, and I felt like it was very important because we had built this whole storyline that my team is this group of mercenaries that I've paid the best veteran wrestlers around to go against these underdog guys that have gotten to the championship because they're this close-knit team.
Yeah.
And so I remember getting – I think the idea – came about when there used to be individual introductions of players.
At the Super Bowl?
I think it was at the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah.
And that year's Super Bowl, or I guess this was, maybe it was the previous year, the Patriots came out as a team.
Yeah.
And I thought, that's a great idea. That Blacklist would do that. And the Ego Busters would all want to come out separately and all get their own glory.
Uh-huh.
And so, and even the length of it, sort of was that banked into the idea, because obviously you knew it was going to take a lot of time, but I think at that point we'd built up for almost a solid year this idea of this championship match.
Mm-hmm.
And we build anticipation throughout the night for the championship match. And you now you have the anticipation of Jimmy Jacobs being involved, and there's just, you can cut the anticipation in the air with a knife, and you're making him wait that much longer for the match to start. And I think it was a calculated move of, you know, it took, I didn't time it, probably 5-10 minutes to
probably
get
close to it,
everyone out there and really get him in the ring. And no one had seen two whole teams square off yet throughout this whole thing. And so,
at least greater than a natural tag team.
As far as having the four four
team,
face to face, we hadn't done it, even in, like, you know, other than like we jumped the Blacklist at one point.
Right.
That was really the closest you had seen to that. And so that was a very important moment to me, to have it build up to where, you know, all four are face to face. And again, attesting to just how much Jimmy got it. Jimmy walks right up. You know, finally the Blacklist gets in there. They're squared up. Match is getting ready to start. And he comes right up and just like pie faces Jojo Bravo, and throughout the whole match he's just giving this aura that he just couldn't care less about the other team, and that he knows he's got it in the bag because he's a big superstar and these guys are just whatever. And he gives that aura right from the start. And so it was a phenomenal opening to it. And I remember being out there and thinking, like, standing there watching the crowd reaction, watching all the guys come out, and feeling like once we got squared up in the ring, like, okay, this is going to happen. Like, there was just magic in the air, kind of, you know, but you knew that it was going to turn out the way you wanted it to.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we go from there. The teams start out. You have the eliminations don't start right away. There's a lot of back and forth, but then a lot of the opening match was Ego Buster Heat of just beating down the Blacklist, and that's again testament to Jimmy. You know, we're beating down the Blacklist. They start getting their fun spot. Red Wing actually gets the first elimination with this just fucking impressive slam gimmick. It like looks like a regular scoop slam,
mm-hmm.
but then he like turns it in reverse and makes it into a power slam. It looks like he murders
it. Hype really Gotti. Does, yeah.
And so Hype goes out first. Wyatt comes in, and they had actually worked the previous night for the 3XW championship, so they did the same. Wow. They did the exact same kind of like final 2 minutes of the match they did the previous night.
Yeah.
And they come and do that. Wyatt cleans up 1-2-3. We're at 3-on-3, and from there, you know, it was kind of, that was another, one of the things we did break down the order of elimination, and so we wanted Hype to be the first guy out, so at least the three guys that were left were the two guys that had been there all year with us, with Wyatt and Espy, and then our mercenary, Jimmy Jacobs.
The guy who got paid the most money, no doubt.
Yeah.
not even from like a kayfabe point.
Yeah.
You know, everybody's like, oh man, Jimmy Jacobs? Yeah, he's got to be the best one in the ring kind of thing.
And so then on the other side, you had these two vets and Jojo Bravo, who's obviously the smallest guy in the ring.
Yes.
And so they start going back and forth. Again, to kind of call back to the fact that Jimmy knew that he was going to the WWE, he does a lot of WWE finish sequences.
Yeah.
You watch it.
Yeah.
Does the five-knuckle shuffle. Does the Superfly Jimmy Snuka finish. A Macho Man elbow drop.
He did a Hulkster thing, too.
Yeah, Hulkster leg drop.
Which I think somebody else did as well. But
yeah, it's one of those things of, like, maybe that was a coincidence, but it looks like when you know the whole story going back, it's like, okay, maybe he's like, I'm big-timing these guys because I know I'm going to the WWE. And that
could
was,
be.
But you could tell like, he's having just a ball, like, being the shit heel out there. And our whole team is. Like, our whole team really did a good job of putting off, like they weren't taking it seriously at that point. Like, they thought we had it in the bag. Once we got rid of Red Wing, because it was like, okay, we got rid of their biggest guy. All they got left is these two old-timers and this little guy. Well, we got this.
Yeah.
And they start having fun, working heat. I remember I got real into it. I think I yelled at somebody, a friend of one, Matt Fitchett. She was dancing in the back. And I was like, oh, honey, all you need is a pole. You'll be right at home, won't you? And I saw her whole demeanor turn. And that's my favorite thing to do, is to see somebody who's just there, like, having a good time, and then really piss them off for real. That's the best moment I can ask for as a manager.
At least being a heel manager, because that's what you're supposed to be doing.
But, you know, then the series of eliminations start to happen where Jimmy starts spearing people. He takes out Outcast, takes out Mikazi, and then what comes to me, what is a defining moment for us. It still is hard for Jason and I to watch it without like getting a legit tear in our eye.
Uh-huh.
Is the moment where Jason drops out the commentary, JoJo looks up because he comes in to try to save the Mikazi pin, and he's too late. So Mikazi rolls out, and Jimmy realizes that he is alone in the ring. JoJo realizes he's alone in the ring.
Yeah,
he
his
looks
teammates
up,
is gone.
He sees Jimmy, and you see the whole Ego Busters start to descend on him, and they're all just laughing. They have it in the bag, and the crowd buys in hard.
Yeah.
And that is a moment that I believe is the turning point for whether we were going to be a success or a failure. Because as we discussed, if that championship match doesn't deliver, then everything that we do doesn't matter. And so to see the crowd buy in so heavily, you hear one guy go, come on, JoJo, and then the whole crowd starts to chant with him.
Everyone just starts chanting, Joe,
yeah,
Joe,
and
Joe.
It's amazing because that's at that moment you know you got them to suspend their disbelief. And they want to, and you spent a year trying to make them want to see JoJo Bravo win the championship, and that's the first moment that it comes out that you did it. Everyone wants to see JoJo win this thing.
Even though it seems potentially completely hopeless.
Yeah, exactly. Or on the other side, like we talked, I mean, to a casual fan, it would look like it's hopeless that Jimmy, that JoJo's going to win.
Yeah.
And on the other side, to a smart, like, Anarchy fan, they would look at that and go, oh, well, obviously he's going over. It's the, you know, underdog guy versus the three heels. But damn it, everyone in that fucking building was up on their feet chanting
every
for JoJo.
Every single person, yeah.
And, you know, the smartest of smart marks was up chanting for JoJo. And so it was that moment of like, man, we got him. And it like I said, it still brings a tear to our eye just because it's a validation for all the hard work and all the planning. And to see that moment happen. And there's very few other, you know, there's a lot of time. I feel like every championship show we've ever had, the people have bought in very hard.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, the most recent one that I remember is Paco getting worked over in the championship that we won. Paco's taking the heat, and the fans are just rabid to see him take over and, you know, get a hot tag.
Right.
And, you know, but in every championship match has a moment like that. And we've done a very good job, I think, of making them all mean something. And it's gotten to a point now where we, you know, we still are making them mean something, but the championship show as a whole is just has an aura about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's because of that moment in that match, yeah, where, you know, people know it's a big deal because the people made it a big deal in
right,
that match.
Yeah,
they decided
sure.
It was a big deal that JoJo wins that match.
Whoa, slow down.
Spoilers.
Slow down, man. Slow down. It's 3-on-1. You're getting ahead of yourself here, man. It's 3-on-1. Yeah, three ego busters.
Living in the moment.
Yeah, yeah. Three ego busters versus just JoJo Bravo. And as if that isn't bad enough, you have Dan Walsh running in to try to cause, to seal it up for the ego busters. And then out from the back, Colt Cabana comes in to make the save to keep, just to keep a 3-on-1 situation to keep going.
And this was my favorite interaction I've ever had with JoJo Bravo.
Oh, yeah?
I'm running down what's going to happen in this match. And, that, you know, Colt Cabana's going to run out, this is going to happen. And he goes, oh, man, I just realized it. You guys are the NWO. Colt Cabana is Sting. And I don't know why that popped me really hard. Me and JoJo used to really bond over WCW references. But yeah, I think that's another thing that adds to the legitimacy of the match. And we kind of thought of that on the fly of like, because of the run in earlier in the night, you know, we hadn't planned that finish. And so we thought, well, how it would be so great if Dan Walsh is going to try and interfere in this match. And Colt comes out to make sure that no one gets screwed over like he did.
Right.
And so Dan Walsh rears back to hit somebody with a chair. Colt appears, takes the chair, gets rid of Dan Walsh, hits him with the elbow, drops me off the apron, throws some punches at Jimmy Jacobs and Brandon Espinoza. And during this whole, you know, whole crazy thing, Espy ends up getting eliminated.
Uh-huh.
And it kind of starts the waterfall in motion. And then eventually the chair comes back into play. There's a false finish. Again, we realize the people are really engaged in the match because Brandon Espinoza has been eliminated, but he gets the referee. Wyatt is the legal man. Jimmy comes in with the chair, guts him with the chair. Wyatt hits something. 1, 2, big false finish, and the crowd bites again. And that was another one where it's like, man, they really think that there's a shot JoJo doesn't win this match. And so it's just emotion. You could feel the emotion come through on tape. And that's the thing that I hate to gush about the match so much, but everybody just did such a good job. Everybody involved with it did an amazing job. All guys in the match, even Andrew, as much as we like to hate on him in commentary, makes it everything a big deal. You know,
yeah.
He really sells that it's hopeless that JoJo's going to win. He, you know, sells the Dan Walsh run in, Colt coming in, like everything gets sold so well. And so everybody that had anything to do with this match, it was the perfect storm, you know. And then so Wyatt gets eliminated. And my favorite thing to see is Mikazi's dad occasionally brings down a group of people.
Uh-huh.
And you can see him in the shot when Wyatt gets eliminated. And he is sort of stone-faced throughout most events that he is on, despite the fact that he is having a very great time. We always get told, you know, I'm so glad, you know, you're doing a great job. He's always very nice to us, and you know, sends us every match that he comes to. He makes sure to put us over afterwards and stuff. But he's also, you know, he's just not a man of many emotions. And when Wyatt gets eliminated, he comes up out of his seat and his hands are in the air, and he like, it's the happiest I've ever personally seen the man. And that was that's another moment that we go back to. It's like, man, if you got him, you're doing something. Yeah. You know, like when it comes down, it's Jimmy Jacobs versus Jojo Bravo, and the scores have been settled. He freaked out, and that's one of my favorite things to watch, is him come up out of his seat.
But even still, that's just two out of the three ego busters that Jojo Bravo had to run the gamut through. He still had to take care of Jimmy Jacobs.
Now, this is another thing, again, to put him over, but you know, he's coming in on a brother price. He doesn't know us from Adam. He is probably pretty certain he's never going to return because he knows he's leaving the Indies pretty soon. And, you know, he had been having fun earlier in the night, but when it came down to Jimmy versus JoJo in that last 10 to 15 minutes, he turns it the fuck on. They have a phenomenal kind of little one-on-one match. They trade finishes, trade big strikes. He really turns it on and has a really phenomenal finish to the match. Jimmy Jacobs gets scooped up for that samurai driver.
Washing. A few people in the crowd actually called it out, too, which was really good, I thought.
He hits it, man, 1, 2, 3, and everyone comes up out of their seat. That was the moment. I remember watching it through the window, because I'd left after the Colt Cabana spot.
And so yeah,
I
was watching you got a good, really good shot of you crawling out towards the back, too.
So I'm watching it through the window, and that was the moment that I kind of got tears in my eyes, was watching the finish of the match and seeing everyone come up out of their seat for it. And it's just because, I mean, earlier in the night, the Viking War Party and Vega and Fitchett had the same reaction of everybody comes up out of their seat, standing ovation after the match. And so to have two of those matches on your card, that's you're trying to build as
so
this
close
big,
together too.
Yeah, and you're trying to build this as your Super Bowl, you know, as your big WrestleMania card or whatever, and you know, you have this idea in your head of that it's going to be that, but you can't make it that. The guys in the ring and the fans have to make it that. And so to have two matches on the card that people felt so strongly about that they gave it a standing ovation meant a lot to me. And to know that we had built this story, because once we had the rosters locked in, we knew JoJo was the guy that we wanted to score that final pinfall. And now it wasn't on Gary, it was on Jimmy Jacobs, which even more of a dream scenario than we had at the start.
Yeah.
And
even more of an unlikely scenario.
Yeah,
too,
yeah.
To be honest about it.
And so then the crowd to react like that and explode for the win was just, it was a moment to me of like relief almost. It was like, we did it. And if we never did another one, we told that story. We wrote that book from start to finish.
Yeah.
And absolutely. It was like, you know, even if we're writing the next book, and our fucking publisher pulls out halfway through or whatever, we got this one to hold on to for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, that book made it out.
And the other thing that sort of set a precedent was the big celebration afterwards.
Yes.
JoJo cuts the promo. The whole blacklist comes out and, like, tackles him. And they all pass the trophy around, like the Stanley Cup.
I thought that was really cool, too.
Yeah, cuts the promo about how it's all for them, and they're all
for the fans.
Honorary members of the Blacklist, and Mikazi takes it around. Everybody gets to touch it again. There's the moment where he comes in face-to-face with his dad and gives his dad a big high-five, and from what I understand, apparently, a lot of his family members had not seen him wrestle until he started to wrestle with us.
Hey.
And so you know, it's this moment between a father and son that happens there too, and it's just, it sets a moment for every time that somebody has won the championship, they've cut a very real promo afterwards. There's no one, I think, outside of our circle, inner circle of me, you, Pat the sound guy, Jason the cameraman, Tito McGee the former announcer, you know, we all live, eat, and breathe this because it's our thing. As far as talent goes, I don't know that at the time anybody cared as much as JoJo Bravo cared. And he really appreciated that we strapped the rocket to him and built the whole first season around him. And so it was a very real emotional promo that he cut. And everybody that won it afterwards, it was kind of, that was the thing, was I was just like, just cut a promo, you know, talk about what this meant to you.
Yeah.
And so you've gotten, well, of course, we'll get to there, but other very organic moments that happens after the championship wins. And the precedent for that was sort of set here, which, again, you can't script that. You can't,
no, not at all.
You know, we couldn't say...
You could script it, but it's just not going to have the same impact.
Exactly.
If it wasn't so organic, leading from JoJo Bravo.
Yeah, you couldn't say, oh, JoJo, care about this and cut this promo.
Be
yeah.
emotional. And shed maybe a tear or two.
I don't even think we told them to get on the microphone. I think he just, you know, he did it, and we told him to celebrate, obviously, and it was just one of those things of, like, I couldn't have wrote it any better. Like,
yeah.
It was a great promo. It meant a lot, and it's, you know, JoJo's a guy that I do hope someday we see back. I know it hasn't really worked out here recently, just travel and, you know, different things, working in different groups of guys. But I do think there's a story there for his return because of how much he cared for it in the beginning and everything that we did in the beginning.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, basically, yeah, that was season one. That's not just the end of the new episode. That's the end of an entire season worth of shows.
And sort of the end of an era, you know, we knew we start cycling in at the next show, guys like Danny Adams that go on to become, you know, big stars for us. And it's not quite a, you know, full turnover. It takes a couple years for that. But, you know, we do start to focus the whole next season on Casey Carrington. And
spoiler.
Yeah. They know.
No, not everybody knows. Remember, we got a couple people who came up and asked to get some of the old DVDs because they've never seen them.
You can get on SmartMarkVideo.
You can totally buy them on SmartMarkVideo. Or if you leave us a message, we might just burn you an actual DVD ourselves and bring it to the show for you.
We'll hustle for you.
Hey.
We watched it back, and there's a couple matches on this show where you look and realize, man, no one from the ref or anybody is involved in the promotion anymore.
Yeah.
And
even the main event itself.
Yeah, but...
You look back, and you're like, wow, we haven't seen most of these guys in a while.
But, it still holds up.
For sure.
We go back, I think, you know, stage two is the only one that we sort of felt like, there's a lot of things we would have changed. I think this card, I mean, even now, there's nothing that I would change about it. I think the pacing was perfect. And I remember getting praise from, you know, people afterwards for how we paced the card and just how we put it together. And I don't know, it's one of those things where it wasn't. I don't feel like it was our work really. It was the guys.
It was a cumulative effort.
They bought in.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
They bought in. We wanted it to be special, and a lot of them went out there with the idea of, okay, we're going to make this special. And that's not something, again, that you can force people to do. But you had people like Fitchett, Vega, Alex, JoJo, you know, even got all the way up to guys like Jimmy and Colt, understood that this was a very big show for us. And, you know, we brought in a huge crowd that night, and a lot of them were there just to see Colt Cabana, and we retained them because of all the pieces around those names. And so... you know, this was the make or break card, and so that's why if we went long or if this is a 4 or 5 parter, I don't know, but you know, this was a very special night for all of us involved. And I know you guys weren't quite as heavily involved in the business side of it yet. You guys were still
the ring crew, basically.
Yeah, you guys were still kind of coming along on that side of it, but I can't speak for everybody, but I know from Jason and I's standpoint, it was just like I said, this huge weight off our shoulders of like, fuck, we did it. Like, and it was something that people told us wasn't going to work. People that we booked that night and that felt very strongly for us and liked us were like, man, I don't know if this is going to work.
Take off at all.
You know?
Yeah.
And to see us sell a place out and, you know, put on this banger of a card, like, it was like, man, we can do this. So this was our, and you figure that was our 4th show ever.
Yeah.
And it got universal praise. And so we were like, man, if we get some steam behind us and some knowledge behind us, man, we can do this. We can really kick some ass. And now here we are, damn near 4 years in, getting ready to start our 5th season in 6 weeks.
Yeah. It's
and,
coming close.
And so we're still rolling right along.
Yeah. Yeah, and as for the podcast goes, obviously we're going to have season 2, 2015 season, stage 1, right? There's no STLI yet.
Yeah, STLI was not a thing yet, so it'll be, the next one we cover will be stage 1, And you're going to hear about the return of Casey Carrington and how that all went down, some of the fun things involved with that, and the demise of Dan Walsh from a very unexpected source. And I don't really remember much else, but I'm interested to watch Stage 1 because I feel like it might be a sneaky bad one. I feel like I don't remember a whole lot from it.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe I'll pick it apart.
I think the thing is the beginning of like that season, it's kind of overshadowed because of the whole the Chaos Nation thing was such a thing that we focused on. Yeah. I think some of the rest of it, you never know. It might be really great stuff too.
We'll have to see.
And we're all going to find out is what next time we watch Stage 1 2015 for the PWCS podcast.
All right, guys, there you have it. The first season of PWCS in the books, and it's in audio form as well. So it's also the first season we've gone all the way through here on the podcast. So I sort of have a similar feeling, similar emotions as I did that night sitting here recording this and getting ready to send it out to the world, because this is another thing that I've always wanted to do a podcast, and I've always wanted to have a reason to do it. You know, I used to, back in the day, used to blog back before podcasts were a thing and stuff like that. And I never thought that people would actually give a crap about something that I wanted to talk about, let alone something of my creation. I am not doing like a raw breakdown or something silly like that. It's cool that you guys are willing to listen to me talk about professional wrestling from my worldview, what pro wrestling looks like for me. And I'm glad that you guys are interested in coming back each and every week. Some fun stories, man. I listened to that audio a little bit before I kind of wrapped this up and produced it. And, you know, there was a lot of really fun stuff that happened after that show concluded that we didn't really get to talk about. It was, or didn't talk about for whatever reason. But I remember Final Bell goes through and we go back to do the promos. We do reacts. And at that time, it was all in one room. And everybody sort of had their moment. Me and Jason kind of specifically both had fun little anecdotes and moments that are kind of ours forever, you know, these little tiny moments that you looked at. We have these moments every once in a while where we both look at each other and it's like, man, I can't believe we're fucking doing this, because somebody else might just think it's a small thing with 140, 150 people, whatever. That night we had 100, close to 170. And some people might consider that small, but to us, I mean, we never thought we would do this. And I know I could speak for myself, it was always a dream, and you don't ever think about accomplishing your dreams. And that night, we really were able to look at each other and go, man, we, as I've said, in both forms of audio, the intro and the meat of this episode, we got to complete that book, and we got to do it with guys that we had previously traveled all around the country to watch, in Jimmy and Colt. And it was a fun thing to look at, to sit at the end of the night. And I went to go, I kept trying to find Jimmy to pay him, and somehow we kept getting crossed up. And I remember I found him and he was like, hey man, oh thanks. All right. I'm trying to get out of here, man. Somebody started a nasty rumor that you had stolen the till. And I found out later, like he was being playful or whatever, but he had been like, man, this isn't the kind of guy that like would just run out with all the money, is it? And then for Jason's recording the promos. And we get a really great promo out of Jojo Bravo that night. And again, that's not to continue to heap praise on him, but that's because of Jimmy Jacobs. Jojo had cut a couple and apparently wasn't just feeling it. And Jimmy came up to him and was like, hey man, cut that fucking real promo. Tell these people how you really feel. And just kind of hyped him up. But Jason is the only one that's ever seen that, but he had it on camera of Jimmy hyping up Jojo and coaching him. And he cuts this great fire promo. And, it's just a magical night, man. I can't compare it to anything. I can't tell every little story that happened, but we always end up somehow at Denny's afterwards. And I remember that night at Denny's, man, just feeling a success that I don't know that we've ever felt again. There's been maybe when we get to the original Last Man Standing match, I think that's the closest thing that I can compare it to, of something that we built and built and built, and it happened, and it was a success in every form. That was the cool thing about the Championship Spectacular. You know, if you go back in this match, if that same match would have taken place in front of 80 people, I mean, would we have creatively felt fulfilled? Of course. But this was it was a success on every level. We broke even with this huge budget. We felt creatively fulfilled. Everything came out exactly how we wanted it to. And then the reviews were amazing. You know, we went the next day and we're looking on Twitter even that night, and the reviews that are poured in are fantastic. So It was one of those deals where it was like every way that you could possibly be rewarded by what we do, it happened that night. And it was an amazing thing to think back on. And so I guess we'll kind of once and for all put the bookend here on season one. And now the next episode, we'll be traveling into season two. And there's a lot of really great stuff coming up there. And man, these next three episodes specifically, I think you got to wait until it's probably going to be another three-parter. But we finally, I think, broke each other somewhere in this audio. And I'm very excited to send it out. But there's a show to promote. There's always a show to promote, as I talked about last week. So we are heavy into this. Is kind of at 4 weeks out is when I really start getting heavy, feeling the need to push things heavy. So here we are. We got the Facebook event out. Brown Paper Tickets finally approved the damn event. So you can buy tickets now. Go to Facebook/PWCS Wrestling to click that you're going on the event. Share it out to all your friends. Head to www.pwcswrestling.com. The link should be up there by the time this podcast gets out to your ears. And if all else fails, head to stage2218.brownpapertickets.com. That's the direct link to the ticket site. Guys, you do not want to miss this. We're kind of putting the finishing touches on it, so I can't announce every match, but I can tell you some of the big ones that we have on the books that I don't even think are out there yet. We have Matt Kinway is going to go one-on-one with Paco Gonzalez in Paco's first Gateway Heritage Championship title defense. Marty Bell is going to go one-on-one with the Empress of Evil, Reign Victoria. And then a huge last man standing main event, Danny Adams, one-on-one with Gary J. These guys have been knocking each other out since their entire history together here in this company. The first event that they ever locked horns at, they knocked each other out with a vicious headbutt, and they've been back and forth ever since. And on that night, June 16th, Saturday night, we're going to put an end to it. One of those men is going to knock the other one out. They're not going to be able to answer a 10 count. And we are going to finally determine who the heaviest hitter is. And guys, I can't wait for you to see it. There's so much more coming up that night. Go to the Facebook, click invite, invite all your friends. We want to make this a huge event because we're heading towards the return of St. Louis Anarchy, and it's going to be every month in that building, guys, quality professional wrestling. And if you are waiting until July to see quality professional wrestling in that building, you're making a huge, huge mistake because there's going to be four or five matches that I know right off the top of my head are going to be absolute bangers that night. It's going to be a huge night, entertainment, wrestling. It's all going to be there. I can't wait for you guys to come check it out. Again, www.pwcswrestling.com. And come back next week when we start breaking down the second season of PWCS. Thanks so much, guys. We'll see you then.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.